Can you hear me okay? Yeah, cool, awesome. Really good to see you all. Welcome. Okay. Here we are at module 10. Our second module 10 call. So this is our last curriculum call for our work together. I want to give you a bit of info on what happens next, just so you sort of have this in the back of your mind. Okay, the chat is very much open, so please feel free to use that. So on today's call, we'll do a check-in around the practice pods, and we'll talk about the aims of this module. And we'll talk a bit about, I don't have a massive amount of structure to this call because usually folks have questions and we can just talk through bringing the tools from SBCA into a coaching offer, how you might go about doing that, any questions you have around this, okay? But next Tuesday, Scott is going to be hosting a call which is all about certification and what comes next. So he'll take you through the process for certification, but also give you a bit of a tour around the graduate support program. So we have supervision calls available to you, advanced practice calls. You can host a call if you want to share your expertise. And we also have a monthly creation station call hosted by Susan, one of the coaches, one of the graduate coaches, which is all about using courage-based planning to bring your coaching offers to life. So Scott's going to go through that in a bit more detail next week. And then we will have our closing circle the Tuesday after, which is the 27th of September. I highly recommend coming to both of those calls. The certification one will be recorded. They will all be recorded. But I think for the closing circle, it's a good idea to be there just because you get the opportunity to share. It's a great way of closing up this part of the work. It's especially and particularly useful if you have a crunchy relationship with endings. No matter how big or small this ending feels, it can be a really lovely thing to consciously choose to be present for an ending. So I know for me that has been a really lovely part of the process. Everyone clear on that? Anyone got any questions about any of that? All good. I think I can see you all. Okay, cool. So just do a check-in around this last week, whether anything's been coming up for you in your pods or in your client work or your own self-reflection. Anyone have any questions or anything they wanna throw out there? Yes, Sharon, sorry, I didn't see your hand up. Go for it.
Well, yesterday I did a group session for my people who'd been on my 30-day program in whenever it was June, and I've decided I was going to do this kind of what I call momentum sessions for them, like I do a call for 6 months. And for the last 3 weeks, I've been going through all the module stuff, and I've been like literally telling myself, going, "How am I going to use this stuff? I can't do it. It's so much. It's too hard. I'm not qualified. I'm not confident. Blah, de, blah, de, blah, de, blah." And in the call yesterday, one of the people in there, she was going on about this thing. She couldn't say no to her client. She couldn't say no. She knew it was the wrong thing to do, but she was so scared of not having money coming in and all this kind of thing. And I found myself going into, I'm like, sounding like, I'm sounding quite competent with all this stuff, that I just it just all came out, and I was kind of like going, well, asking her all these questions and just telling her and talking about how she was holding herself back and keeping herself safe and all that stuff that we've been talking about. And I was like, oh my God, she was really appreciative and it was lovely. And I felt I'd really helped her and everybody else. And I was like, I'm not saying that I've still got so much to learn, but I was kind of like, oh, maybe I can use this stuff. Oh my God.
So, I love that. Sorry. I'm wondering what, like, we're all giving you this lovely hand and hearts. I love it. Love it.
Oh, thank you, team.
I'm wondering, Sharon, like, what are you entertaining as a new way of looking at this now? What's shifted for you in that moment?
Well, one, I just saw how powerful it was for Jenny. And how powerful it was, because you could see there were six people on the call and you could see that, like, the penny had, like, really dropped for everybody, which was just incredible. It was amazing. And she sent me, as soon as the call had finished, she sent me a WhatsApp, and she just put in capitals, she just put, "Thank you so much, really, really appreciate the support you offer and the space you hold." And it just made me want to cry.
Good. Makes me want to cry hear you saying this. This is so cool. Yeah. And, you know, I just really want to acknowledge your courage in saying what you said to her. Because you could have decided to not share what you know.
Yeah, I did think about it. I opened my mouth and then I was like, okay, there's no going back now, you know. I wouldn't say it wasn't a full-on coaching session. Of course it wasn't. I'm not confident enough to do that yet.
Yeah.
But it was just a little baby step.
Well, and so I think you're offering us this beautiful example of what happens when we don't just think about something, but we actually take an action. And it's why I'm so experimentation, take the smallest, most doable step. Because in the moment that you make that new choice, it sounds to me like you just kind of went with it, and then suddenly you're in it and you're having the conversation, you're like, oh shit, I'm doing it.
I know. Yeah, exactly.
It's beautiful. But even in doing it that way, something changes in your self-concept. And you do that enough times and it's like the beliefs shift, the emotions around it shift. Everything starts to change in a way that cannot change when we just think about something. We just entertain the intellectual understanding. Yep, I can totally see the sense in believing that, or in kind of, you know, knowing that. When you have the full body experience, something shifts, because you've now got irrefutable evidence that something is different. And the reason I know this, and the reason why I'm such a proponent of doing things differently rather than just the belief stuff, which I think is super important, and in some ways it becomes paradoxical, right? Because sometimes you can't take the new action without the belief. But my research into self-doubt was a phenomenological inquiry, is what it's called. That's the research method that I used. And it's because I was finding, like, my experience of self-doubt, my personal experience of self-doubt, was not an intellectual cognitive one. It was a felt sense. And my research, my academic supervisor said, I really want you to look at phenomenological research because I think that's what you're describing. Thank God she just validated me and said, follow that path. And all phenomenological research, all phenomenology is that holistic experience. It's not just an intellectual one. It's our felt sense. It's our memories. It's our body sensations, emotions. Everything gets involved. And self-doubt is one of those experiences. And so when we counter that with an experiment that involves all of those things, it offers the fastest route to kind of breaking down those stories and beliefs that hold us back. Because we're giving ourselves an equally powerful evidence that the counter is also true. And it's really hard for our brains to hold both things to be true in that way. It's like, oh, I now have to doubt my doubt is 100% true all the time. So you start to have exactly this experience, Sharon, just, and that's the smallest, most doable thing, even though it sounds like it was just like something came through you and whipped you over there. That's why it can be so powerful. And you now can't go back to being the person who didn't do that.
No. And I've just remembered now as well why it was so strong, because she was crying, you know, she was on the verge of tears and she was lit. She was going, why can't I do the thing? I'm so, what's wrong with me? I can't do the thing. What's, you know, and I just felt I couldn't, you know, I had to help her. I had to try and make her understand that there's nothing wrong with her, you know. It was a real, oh my God.
Very cool. And so this is the thing. Now every trainer that comes into contact with you, Sharon, gets this amazing experience where you're not just helping them to figure out their business stuff. It's who they are in leading their business that they get to experience with you. I think having a really powerful experience of coaching is a fantastic marketing tool, because people go, you need to check this woman out. She's amazing. Let me tell you about what changed for me. We don't need to worry too much about all these tactics when word of mouth is supporting our work.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
So cool, Sharon. What a great example of just giving something a go. Love it.
I wouldn't have said anything if it had gone like, no, I would have said something either way. You know. So. Thank you.
So good. That's beautiful. What a great way to start. I'm curious to know if anyone has started using courage-based planning. Is anyone going, oh, I'm giving that a go? Lorraine, how are you doing with it?
Hi. I used it last Thursday, I think it was, and it worked really well. It was...
With a client?
Yes, with a client, yeah. I just kind of... It was one of our first calls, but I just thought it might work, and I wasn't quite sure if I was doing it at the right time, but I started, so I just had to run with it. And it worked really well. I just felt it gave me something to hang everything else around about, so that was good. That was really good. I had another session this morning with a client, and I was just like, should I start with the courage-based goals? But then I sort of started with the you know, what is your overarching goal, that one, you know, uncovering the protective beliefs.
Yep.
And that didn't go so well. I think she sees a therapist. It was all round about finances and money. There's a whole load of family trauma there, so I think I was kind of backing off, because just thinking, oh shit, this stuff is really, you know, it's like, you know, bullying from our father, from our brother, you know, just a lot of stuff. So I think I kind of backed off it. So I think it's something to take to supervision, I guess.
Right. Well, and I think also, you know, it sounds like you made a call based on the information that was coming up at the time around just what felt comfortable for you.
Yeah. I was just quite conscious that, you know, and even, you know, everything was just quite, you know, she's obviously been in therapy a long time about it. And yeah, it was all quite difficult. So I think we sort of unlocked a few things, but I'm not sure. Plenty to reflect on, I would say.
And the perfect place to take that is supervision. Yeah. Absolutely. And I'd also offer, like, a really great PhD that a friend of mine, Aaron, did, it was on perceptions of coaching effectiveness. And he like interviewed hundreds of people, like clients, coaches, and observers, and found that coaches always rate the experience of coaching the lowest. So I find that just absolutely fascinating. Like, I had hundreds and hundreds of interviews, right, with these triads. The client always rates it the highest, or predominantly would rate it the highest, and the observer the second highest, and the coach is always going, this is all the things that went wrong, which makes total sense, right? Because we're always like aware of the choices we had in the moment, whereas, you know, the others aren't. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, and she's quite a tricky sort of character as well. And I just wondered if she'll ever commit to anything. But, you know, but we'll see. But yeah, but it was good experience, you know.
Very cool. And it sounds like you've used the courage-based plan and had a good experience of that.
Yeah. I've used this exercise before and had good experiences. So I guess I've used all the exercises and it's been quite, oh my God, that's amazing reaction from clients. And yeah. With this one, I just felt it was just like, I think she was going off everywhere. And I think I was just feeling a bit, oh my God, you know, this is really some deep shit. I don't know whether this is actually what I should be covering or if she should be going to get a better therapist.
Right. Yeah. Cool. This is all part of it, right? It's all part of it. Yeah. Beautiful. Anyone else want to share? Joe, I think you had your hand up around using courage-based planning. Is there anything you wanted to share around that?
I've been using it myself and it's really helpful. And it is always, for me, coming back to the why are things sitting in hard and risky? What's coming up for me is the stuff that's sitting in hard is genuinely where I have a business problem. And the stuff that's risky is more belief-based. So it is helping me move forwards towards my goal, for sure. I'm finding it tricky to be disciplined around the kind of daily action and that bit, so I'm working on that. But the other thing I'm noticing is, like, with my other, I don't know if decision-making is the right word, but elsewhere in my life, I'm now thinking about that. It's like, why am I not doing that? Is that because it's too hard? What would an easier version of that look like? So the application on a day-to-day basis is just like, it's there everywhere, you know, almost too much sometimes. I'm like, quiet and
dead. I can't do everything. Exactly.
But I'm really, really enjoying it. It feels really supportive.
That's so good to hear. I think I found that as well. And I think once you've used this a few times and you start to see that there isn't really anything you can't do, that's been an interesting one. As for me, I'm a bit of an overworker, and now it's a matter of, I actually have to manage my own capacity. It's almost like a different problem. I think you do get to a place where it's like, oh, it really is just a matter of taking the next step and doing the next thing. And what is it that I want to do? Because then you have the other part of this, right, is then the choice, the existential choices around what if I know I can probably do pretty much anything. I don't know what the quality will be like, but I can give it a go. Then it's the choosing that becomes the challenge.
Yeah, and hand in hand with that is the experimental bit, which is, you know, the detaching from the outcome. And, you know, for example, if I'm asked to do something that genuinely is a stretch on my capabilities, it's like, okay, I can choose to say yes to that, knowing that the outcome may not be perfect, but knowing that I've given it a damn good try and learning some stuff along the way.
Absolutely.
And I felt like this module has been like the missing jigsaw puzzle, and I know we've talked a lot in different places about what comes first, the chicken or the egg, but just now seeing the whole process and how cyclical it is just again really all makes sense.
I'm so glad. It's like the reward for sticking with me.
Thank you.
That's so good. Anyone else want to share anything that's coming up this week in client work, self-reflection work? Yeah, Nicola.
Hi, everyone. I just feel like, I don't know, I can't believe this is our last class. I'm feeling a bit more of that full circle moment of I started with a new in like one-to-one client on Friday. And you know what? It's like, I'm still getting a chance to try something that I didn't get to practice yet. And so it was a 3-hour strategy session, like just really doing foundational, getting things established. And I think prior to SBCA, I didn't ask as many like biographic, you know, in the way back to biography. I think I often tried to distinguish like, no, therapy, you know, goes back to the past, but coaching is present and future oriented. But I feel more comfortable to understand how and why we might do that. And it was just so cool. I have my questions ready, knowing I might try weaving them in a way I haven't done before. And it was so funny because it was even kind of intuitive. Like we just painted a bit of a profile of what seems to get in her way of different habits she wants to cultivate. And I nearly was going to go into more of an instrumental place. And then I thought, let me start asking a few of those questions. Like, how does this now make sense to you in terms of perhaps some of early life? And she was like, that is so funny that you say that, because it really moved me to see that. And it actually brought to mind some things in childhood. And then I used just a few of your questions, like how safe did you feel as a child? And they were profound. And she actually said, and we covered a lot of great ground, but she said her key takeaway was, she said, this is sort of blowing my mind that some of that early life stuff is connected to why, you know, these themes and these through lines, even the profession she chose, you know? And so I just felt so appreciative, like to be like, oh my God, because I now trust myself more and I feel a little more equipped. I just know how important that piece can be. Yeah. Anyway, it was super exciting. And then the other one was just that I just did a consult with a new prospective client, which is why I was late. We were just wrapping up. But Sass, I just feel that feeling of like, oh my God, it almost seems like a dream. Like it's so aligned. Like she even said verbatim, I think what's at root is like struggles to believe in myself. And I was able to be like, well, funny you should say, because I've been trained in the self-belief coach. I mean, I didn't say it quite so.
Yeah.
But I'm feeling very grateful and excited. I just think this is going to be spiral learning for years, but I don't know. I'm just in that moment of, I don't know, just celebration of ways I've grown as a person, as a coach.
Yeah. So fun. I know. It's so fun because I sit and watch you and all, and you know, some of us have exchanged emails over the last 6 months, and you've shown up in the discussion forum and class and everything, and I just think it's so fun to get to this point and go, okay, cool, this is when it gets to be really cool, right? yeah it's really fun. I love that. And isn't it interesting, you're reminding me just in Lorraine and Nicola, the way you're talking, like I'm reminded of one of the first clients that I started those questions with, someone who was a bit tricksy, like Lorraine, like the way you described that, a bit like defended and kind. I sort of thought, ooh. And this was quite a alpha male guy that had been referred to me, and I was kind of just getting my head around all of this stuff. And I remember saying to him, do you think the childhood had an impact here? Like, what comes up when I ask you that question? And just seeing how he kind of let something down and let me in a little bit and shared some stuff. And then for the next week, I kept getting these messages from him going, oh, I've just thought about this. And his big thing was he was burnt out, couldn't delegate. And he had this kind of like, well, that's just what you do. Like, you just get on with it. Men do that. Like, he kept sort of saying, well, that's what a man does. And I was kind of like, well, we've got so much to go into here. But, you know, talking about his childhood, he was like, oh, I have to be the reliable one. And it's like, you know, coming to the conclusion that actually he had this massive fear of abandonment. And that's why he was doing so much work to try and, you know, maintain a ton of relationships and do far too much really for one person, and slowly letting himself off the hook. And I remember thinking, Well, if you told me that actually talking to someone like that, who presents in such a way as to be completely defended and protected, and actually underneath it all, there is this real deep fear of abandonment. It's like, okay, this work, I'm sold, I'm in. If, you know, like, it's like, okay, that's it. That is the moment where it's like, I'm all in, I'm all in. So I totally get those experiences with clients where you're just like, something really changed here, not just for them, but for you as the practitioner. And it's like, you kind of move into a new place. I don't know. I don't know if that resonates for folks, but yeah. Yeah. Really cool. Awesome. So let's talk a little bit about, yes, the comparison as we better understand the roots. Yeah, completely. The compassion, sorry. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely with you. Yeah. All right, guys, let's talk a little bit about Module 10. The aims of Module 10, right? This idea that there's no right linear process for anyone to achieve anything, and that our work is to really support our clients to feel resourced when those setbacks and challenges arise. Like, that's part of the process, we just build it in, right? And the reason we do that is because then it reflects reality. then the client's plans actually support the client. It means that they've got a better chance of realizing their dream, achieving their goals. And the whole point of that for us, because we're always detached from their goals, the point for us is the goal becomes the vehicle by which you experience some expansion of your self-concept. The goal is the means to the end being you get to be more of who you are. You get to see more of who you are. It's who you become along the way that actually has these incredible benefits. And so, for us as self-belief coaches, we're advocating for the client's growth, always, not their goals. What that means is that sometimes growth comes from discomfort and failure and disappointment and all of that shit, right? So, but because we're not invested in the goals, we can be with the client in those moments where actually it is pretty tricky and they don't really know what to do, right? So, one of the things I just wanted to come back to is that it's not just that there isn't a right linear or ideal way to achieve the goal. There isn't a right linear or ideal way to start, complete, or conduct a coaching relationship, right? Like, there isn't a formula for that. And I actually think it would be a disservice to try and create one. But what I do know is that this work around courage-based goals can be an amazing start point, midpoint, and endpoint for a coaching relationship because of exactly what Lorraine was talking about. It gives us something for the client to, you know, do the work of healing their root causes of self-doubt and expanding their self-belief, right? And so working in this model where we help the client to create the goal and then the plan and then follow up with the action. I mean, to me, I think this is ideal for a single session or for a specific coaching offer, which is all about goals and plans, no matter what your flavor of coaching. It's a great way to give people a taste of self-belief coaching, as well as being, you know, the fundamental kind of spine of a longer term engagement. So it's really flexible and forgiving, right? You can use this approach as a standalone offer, as part of something that is specific to your people and your flavor of coaching, as well as use it as like the main kind of anchor, if you like, for a longer term coaching engagement. And yeah, like someone was saying, like, it's the sort of like, I think it was you, Joe, that, you sort of get to that place of, oh, this is the jigsaw puzzle, right? The piece at the, this part of the process is like the jigsaw puzzle of when our clients are pretty wedded to an outcome that they have and that they want, we can support them to achieve that. Absolutely. And they still get to heal their self-doubt if they want to, right? Yeah, really cool. I'm curious to know, like, how, just as I share those different ways of using this approach, like, I'm curious to know what people are thinking about in terms of creating a coaching offer that is, that uses these tools and approaches that you've been playing with over the last 6 months. How are you thinking or formulating, implementing this in your practices? Feel free to stick your hand up. Hey, Charlotte.
Hey. So I have always offered like a single session, hour-ish long session. I mean, it always goes over an hour, but people are like, okay, I can get my head around an hour. And I kind of hadn't talked about it for ages. And then after the session last week, I was like, right, I'm revamping this. I'm making it available just in September to help people like map out what they want to do for the rest of the year. And it feels as though it's kind of given me like a really new enthusiasm for this single session, where I was kind of like, I'm not sure what the point of this single session is. Because with the work that I do with most clients, obviously one session just isn't enough. But when we look at it from this like courageous goal setting viewpoint, it makes total sense to have it as a single session. And then people can go and be like, oh, wow, I actually achieved way more than I thought I could achieve just by doing it this different way. So that's how it's helped me kind of reinvigorate that. And then in kind of the wider context, it's actually, I've realized I love to kind of really get to know people before I commit to working with them.
Right.
And so I'm going like, how does my business look for me? And that actually involves now a free Facebook community. And I feel so excited about like leading people through maybe even a year with like these little tidbits of information that aren't going to solve everything for them, but give them like the seed of the fact that actually they don't have to keep beating themselves up over and over again. And that there's like the space where when they're ready for more help, like I'm there to give it to them one-to-one. So that's been really exciting for me, kind of taking the pressure off, like buy my thing. And actually into like, come join me in this space and let's see what happens.
Love it.
And it feels way more aligned for me as to like how I want to build stuff out. Yeah. So that's been super cool.
Love it. And I think that kind of like community-based freebie, like some people offer a free thing or a workshop. I like doing one-off workshops. I don't like long-term relationships big groups. I'm like, no, just save that for the intimate people. But yeah, it's like playing to those preferences and strengths. It's perfect. And you're absolutely right, Charlotte. What I found, and I know quite a few of my friends who are coaches who've been around for a long time, a lot of them will have these really lush free communities, and they offer some value that feels really boundaried and held, and then that becomes a community that you can make offers to and invite people to take the work further if they want to. It's a cracking model. Really cool. Yeah. I think that's the thing, isn't it? When you start to actually come back into, what are your preferences? What do you need? What feeds you? What excites you? What you start to realize is there's no right way to do anything. But if you are feeling really excited and you have the energy and you're, you know, like just chomping at the bit to support your people, you're more likely to attract the folks that you want to work with, because that becomes magnetic. And it doesn't have to look any way at all. So when, you know, when I see lots of people like kind of replicate other models or whatever, or say, oh, that person's business, I want it to be just like that, help me make that happen. It's a bit like, well, that's not going to be the first thing we do. But it's, you know, it is like, come back to you, come back to what you want, what you prefer, and how this would work for you. Yeah, amazing. So cool, Charlotte. Love it. Anyone else want to share how you're thinking about implementing this work in its entirety? Yeah, Lorraine.
So I think biggest thing is probably I feel more confident about talking about this kind, you know, this. I was always aware of it, but I just didn't feel I had the confidence to really address it. So I felt it was more like if I got there, it was like, oh, you know, rather than being, you know, confidently addressing issues around about self-belief and money. I think probably I've kind of worked out a kind of offering, a bigger offering you could give people, just around about helping them work out their emotional relationship with money, what do they want to achieve out of life, backing up with a financial plan and accountability. And I had sort of prior, so I'd started that with one client and just based on the initial five sessions and then take it from there. Whereas before I was always just kind of like, oh, do one session and then see if another one comes along. And so I think I feel happier selling chunks of sessions and I feel more confident selling that. But actually now that this courage-based goals, that's kind of, I had kind of thought I'd worked it out using all these tools that we had. Now this one, I'm thinking, right, I'm going to swap what I had at the beginning and bring this in. So I change it about again. So that's one offering. But then I also thought, actually, instead of just saying to people, look, you know, instead of, well, we'll start here, let's just have one session and use the courage-based goals.
Yeah.
And so you can take that and walk away with it. And then hopefully they might come back for more based on that. So I guess biggest thing is just, it's given me confidence and maybe some reassurance. I like processes and procedures, you know, so I'm quite disappointed it's not an A to B. But I think the fact I've been trying for years to work out where that A to B is, and now knowing that actually it's okay, there's not an A to B, that makes me feel a lot better. And I've got this to hang it around, so I feel more confident about going out and doing that.
Yeah, I love it. I think that's the thing, isn't it? That when we all kind of go, oh, no one's got the answers, no one's doing it in a spectacularly different fashion, you just get to relax and rest in your own approach. Try shit out, experiment wildly, see what fits. Yeah.
And it's worked really well with the clients that I have been doing it with. So, and I think I'm enjoying it more as well.
Good.
And it's just making me feel more confident about, yeah, moving away from mentoring into more coaching, which is much more fun.
Yeah. Amazing. That's so good to hear, Lorraine. I'm thrilled for you. Brilliant. Really cool. Anyone else want to share anything that's coming up around how you're implementing this work, how you plan to implement it? All good? All right. Yeah, Charlotte, I love that point that the path is getting fully booked one-to-one before groups and memberships. Oh, it can absolutely work the other way around. Of course it can, right? If you're excited about it, of course it can. Yeah, completely, completely.
I just share something?
Yeah, sure.
It absolutely is informing my offer, and it's also informing like some of the stuff I'm doing where I've got workshops booked in and, you know, the approach that I'm taking to those. But I think there's also a subtler change in the language that I'm using and the intentionality behind that language. And, you know, things like with some of my marketing clients and particularly my mentoring clients, I would have talked about marketing mindset in the past, and it's deliberately moving me from talking about it in that way to a way which links into this work, so that if the clients want to go down the route of getting help with their marketing problems, sure, I can help with that. But if there's a chink of light that says, actually, this is a belief that needs to be looked into, that that's set out from the outset in the way that I'm talking in my own marketing and when I'm having kind of initial calls with client or potential clients and things like that. So that subtleness, but that also there's an assuredness that I can notice it in myself. It's a bit like, I think Sharon and others have been saying, it's like suddenly you notice it in yourself, it's like, oh no, this is starting to come more instinctively and more naturally and more bravely as well. Again, you know, I'll offer it out there, and if they decide that they don't want to do that, or in my view probably aren't quite ready for it yet, that's fine, that's cool. But at least I've kind of sown that seed that there may be some different work that they need to sort out.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love it. I think that is my secret plan, right, is that we all show up slightly braver and with that intentionality and that, just the language of that. Even for me, there was a shift in deciding, no, I didn't mean higher self, I really meant healthy self, because so about four people said, is that what you mean? Because that's what I assumed it was, and I'm like, no, because let's just be grounded and in reality. That's so great for those of us who might not have a belief in a higher self. So it doesn't exclude it for those who do, but yeah, it's that intentionality, that languaging has always kind of mattered a bit to me. So yeah, I totally get it. Even things like letting go of self-sabotage, I don't need to over-explain what I mean by self-protection. And I can totally let other people believe that it is self-sabotage. You get to do you. But it's like, oh no, that's how I'm going to show up and explain it, because that's how it makes sense to me, kind of thing. Yeah, really cool. Love it. See, everyone's getting brainwashed. This was my actual plan all along. Brilliant. Okay, so I've got a fun question to ask you. And we can do this as a big group, actually. We did it as a group in the morning class, so let's do it. What does it mean to make a change? Right? So I just want you to think about a time in your life, where you made a change, where you decided you wanted to shift or change something. It might have been a habit or a behavior or a way of being, or it could have been a health goal or something that was like, oh, I'm going to make this change. And then you set about doing it. Might be setting up a business, leaving another paid employment. But tell me about, what has it taken for you to make that change? Like, just reflect on what is it that makes a change happen for you? What are the components of that? Anyone want to share anything that's coming up for them? We're just going to do a bit of a share on our big life changes or important life changes. They don't have to be massive. Rowena shared a beautiful thing this morning about bringing more joy into her life and how she's going about doing that at the moment. It was really cool. Yeah, Charlotte.
For me, it's definitely been an unpicking of, and I think this actually kind of ties in with what I just said in that comment. It's the whole like learning to be my own teacher and allowing myself to like have the space to explore and experiment and play. Because when I first started like dipping a toe into being a business owner as opposed to just a coach, you know, I have spent so many hours and so much money like invested in people who are experts and claiming to be coaches, but actually were just people saying, well, this is what you've got to do. And actually spent years making myself wrong for not, like, actually almost, I will say, not being able to do a lot of the stuff because my ADHD just made it impossible for me to force stuff that wasn't enjoyable. And this, like, process of learning to trust myself and, like, not be, not hung up on the outcome. It's just like, okay, let's just play with this, because if it's a tiny bit new, it's a change. And I loved that thing that you said right at the start of today about how you can never go back to being the person that hasn't done that.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, let's just give myself permission to try a Facebook group. If I hate it, I can shut it down. But if I don't try these things, if I don't allow myself to go with what's tugging me, like, all I'm going to do is sit here and go, oh, I wonder, and never do it. So I think it's like, no, I've spent 37 years not knowing why I don't trust myself. And now, yes, it's scary, but like, let's do it for fun. Let's just like bash out a few pages of a potential short story, which like, and I don't think I'm a writer, but like, I felt called to just like write down these sentences in my head. And it's this thing of like, this isn't just about being a coach. This is about being a human. This has turned into a really long spiel, but you know, that's, I will leave it there.
Very much. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just all this like experimenting, playing and going, no, you've got it. That thing that's telling you to do this is actually right. So yeah, that's been the biggest thing in the changes that I've made. And it's like a curve, isn't it? Like the quicker it happens. So super cool.
Well, and this is the thing that I think, you know, about like when we're always looking for someone else to tell us the answer, like when we don't do that thing that you've done, Charlotte, of saying, I'm going to be my own teacher, I'm going to trust my own preferences and ideas here, what we end up doing is absorbing someone else's, and they're always done for you blueprints, right? But those things don't have the scope or the flexibility to suit your own specific needs and desires and creative impulses. So yeah, I'm so into it. I have to say, I think my favorite thing is adult diagnoses that free the shit out of people. Like, I'm just like, it's so fun, right? And it's so cool to just see how liberated we can be when we let go of those old notions. Yeah, really cool, Charlotte. Love it. Who else wants to share? What's a change you've made? What's it required? What have you got on your notepads?
The thing that comes up for me was summed up really nicely in your, what you called it, the dance of adulthood, one of the early modules. And it's this idea that change is a choice and not changing is also a choice. So when I look at like the most monumental decisions I've made, I can say in my career, because I like life feels too big to say that, but in my career, it's always been like when I've chosen to move out of stasis, when I've chosen to let go of something. And there has to be that readiness for the change. You know, there has to be that sense of, to not make the change feels a bigger risk than to make it. And then it certainly, like the bigger thing for me was taking redundancy from my corporate job. I mean, it took all of my family's financial stability and put that at risk. But actually that risk was one that I was willing to make. And as soon as I explained it to my husband, he was like, yeah, you've got to do this. You know, the risk of not changing was just too big. Yeah. So yeah, that choice piece is really strong for me as well.
The courage to make the choice. Huge. Yeah. Yes, that was what I was thinking of, Charlotte, the Anais Nin quote, the risk to not bloom is too much. I've buggered it up already. You can look it up. But yeah, the courage to make that choice. And I think we think it's one choice, right? The choice to take redundancy. But actually, it's the 78 different choices a day that sit around that during the period of that choice as well, right? That's the one. And the day came when the risk to bloom was greater than the risk to stay in a bud. Yeah, something like that. That's the one. Yeah, Sharon, please share.
I was just thinking about the most massive change that I made, which obviously moving here to Wales in February 2020, we moved here. And I just think that the thing of it is just not to overthink things. and just to not to overthink things and just do them and just see where it takes you. I'm not sure whether that's always a good thing because, you know, I was really upset when we moved here and it was a big wrench. And then, of course, we went into COVID and, you know, I'd spent and I still the many a morning that I wake up even now thinking, what the hell are we doing here kind of thing, you know. But then there was something in my mind when I made that change that was kind of like, well, just do it. And then you can always go back. You can always, you know, you can always unpick it. Nothing is forever, but just do it. You know, just don't overthink it and just get on with it. And that's kind of an approach that I take to lots of things. And I'm not sure whether that's a strength or just madness sometimes, but, you know.
So. Well, I think sometimes that there's something else that's probably helping you make that choice, right? It might not be, your like cognitive reasoning, but there's something else that's getting involved there, right?
Yeah.
Beautiful. Anyone else want to share? I just as you're all talking, I keep thinking about the two big changes I think I've made in the last 10 years. One is to it's more than 10 years ago now, but to come back to the UK, because I lived here for about 7 years and then thought, that's it, I'm done with England, burnt all bridges, literally, and then went back to New Zealand. And then within about 6 days, I was like, I've made a horrible mistake. Like, literally, I can remember it. And I thought, so I'm just thinking about like your choices where you've gone, well, if I don't like it, I can always come back. Can I just tell you that moving from New Zealand to the UK back again was quite an expensive choice. I'm glad I did it now. But there is something I think about being willing to make the change even when it doesn't work out the way you want it to, right? Yeah. So fun. And I guess I ask this question because I think it is really helpful to remind ourselves, like, we're in the business of helping our clients make changes, right? Something they want that's different. They either want to add something to their life or make a change in their lives. When I say life, I mean, of course, work, business, life, as well as creativity and relationships and all of the different permutations of this work. And I always come back to just how freaking courageous it is of our clients to say, yep, I need help to do this. When our culture is like, certainty is the thing to do, you just gotta white knuckle your way through and, you know, fake it till you make it, all of those kind of the cultural and conditioned messages of how to make changes. The kind of hero worship that we have of the lone wolf making it on their own. And the willingness of our clients to say, yep, I want to make a change, or maybe I know something needs to shift, but I don't even know what that is, and I need some help. Like, I just come back to that all the time, and reflecting on the changes I've made in my own life, it's like, wow, yes, I totally want to help you. That's such an honor to support you as you make that shift. Yeah. Yeah, Joe, please go for it.
Sorry, I didn't want to interject, but something I've just been noodling on over the last few days, it's probably actually self-doubt in uncertain times rather than self-belief, and whether self-doubt becomes more heightened. And so I'm noticing in myself that whilst there is a very real risk at the moment around cost of living and everything else, there's a little bit of people whipping themselves up into a frenzy where they're not feeling that risk themselves, but the knock-on effect of other people feeling the risk around them. And I just wondered what your thoughts were around self-doubt in these uncertain times.
Whether
it looks the same or different.
It's fascinating to me that we ever convince ourselves that we're not living in uncertain times. There isn't a period where we're free of that, but I think there are periods where it's closer to home, for sure. And so now we've got this current sort of uncertainty around the cost of living. We've got a new PM and a new monarch, and all of this stuff is kind of making people, you know, think about uncertainty and the temporary nature of life and all of that jazz. I think this is a really human condition, is to worry about the things we can't change. And I think it partly, for me, I always kind of go back to, you know, how do I make sense of this? Well, it's a kind of lie that we tell ourselves that we can control anything, right? Like, even at the most basic level, we're literally living on a rock that's flying through space at 80,000 miles, and it's spinning at 80,000 miles an hour. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I always come back to that, and I think, okay, so what can I control? I can control what I believe, what I feel, what I say, what I do. That's about it. Same as everybody else. So, I don't know. I think there's some real comfort as well in finding people to connect to that help us to feel less alone in our overwhelm. And it's okay that it's overwhelming. It's more about helping, I think, when I come back to this, is what's in my wheelhouse? Has someone asked for help or support, or am I just feeling compelled to support and help? And also, like, I believe we can choose to thicken the narrative of the thin story. You know, the world is on fire, everything is uncertain. Like, we can choose to thicken that in whichever way we want to. And as soon as you start adding in, and in that uncertainty, there is joy and connection and love and safety and warmth and all of those things. Then you start to see that, oh, it's not the only thing. And so then what happens is we have to hold that complexity, the paradox, that both things are true at the same time. But neither are wrong and all of that jazz. And yes, there is deep suffering and inequality, and all of those things are absolutely true. And they've always been true. Does that help you, Jo?
It does, it does. And then I'm also thinking, whilst none of us are bulletproof, that having built up these resources, you know, the self-belief, self-trust, etc., those are helpful from a resilience point of view, and resilience is helpful in uncertain times. And, you know, I can go down, like, if I can feel myself pulling back because other people are pulling back, it's like, hold on a second, is this a genuine risk, or is it a psychological risk? Because I'm going to deal with those two things differently. If it's a genuine risk, I'm going to go and make money in the way that I know how to go and make money. If it's a psychological risk, I'm going to resource myself differently, exactly. If that makes sense as well, and likewise for my clients around me.
And equally, I would say, you know, part of self-acceptance is accepting that we are absolutely human and we have the full spectrum of emotions. And sometimes I watch a nature documentary and I just weep, because I think, yeah, how the hell are we doing this to our planet? And it just makes me feel so hopeless and helpless. And so I just have a good old cry, because in that moment, that feels like the most appropriate response, you know? And so all of that, it's like... It's like that's all part of it, right? But if I start making myself wrong about feeling overwhelmed and upset about the state of our planet, then I, you know, then it's like I'm adding judgment on top of worry, on top of fear. The fear is genuine. Like, I think, you know, that is a very quantifiable risk at the moment. So can I be with that? Yeah, I can be with that. Sometimes we just have to feel our way through this stuff. And I think, you know, for folks like us who have those more developed resources and self-reflection tools, you know, don't forget, we've just come through this massive, you know, completely seismic group collective trauma of this global pandemic that isn't really quite over yet. And I think for those of us that have the ability to sort of be in that ambiguity and complexity, it was a perhaps a little easier to do that, a little less traumatic to be in that than for folks who were kind of getting into the paranoid worry and all of the, you know, the ramifications of that, where people seek their knowledge and reassurance and all of that stuff. So, yeah. Yeah, Lorraine.
Yeah, I was just, so just something happened this weekend, sort of in our family, sort of a huge disappointment. And I guess I kind of be, I was just very aware, just this whole thing, when you said just about thickening the story. Before, I would have been, well, that's just us, you know, it always happens to us, that kind of thing. But I just stopped myself. So I guess it's just actually, no matter what, whether they talk to clients about money, their career or whatever, if you're just making them aware of that possibility that that's what they do, they can pull it in and use it in different parts of their life as well.
Absolutely. Gosh, you've had quite a week, Lorraine.
Yeah, it's been really fun. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really fun. Really fun. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think that idea of what else is true, like that question, what else is true, is very much designed to support a client to accept, oh yes, there is heartbreak and disappointment in this thing, and what else is true. It doesn't negate it, it's like it adds on.
Yeah. And it doesn't define you as well.
No, none of it does. Yeah. Nicola.
Well, just Joe's questions and you and she talking on it, like I do think there's something like about the idea of, like, I'm thinking back to the sameness difference loop, because in a historic era where there may be a little bit more stability, at least for some classes, some groups, right, again, back to the wide array of social location and power, all that stuff, but in some ways, I think it is arguable that, like, it's exponential pace of collective change and kind of a destabilizing time. And I think the predictions are that more flux to come. And in that sense, I think coaching, because I think there'll be, you know, sometimes people initiate change, like your question, what does it mean to make changes? Sometimes there's the courage of the changes we choose and what we dare to dream. But I kind of think there may also be more of that, in some ways, kind of like adaptive hardship, even oriented, like people being forced to make adaptive change. Yeah. Like I did lose my job. My industry has been, you know, like sideways, you know, hit by these bigger collective forces. And in that sense, I hope, like Joe's saying about the resilience, like that's what a lot of the words I wrote are, those self-belief resources. Like, what does it mean? It means courage to risk and tolerate uncertainty. What does it mean? Belief that change is possible. Like so many, trust, yeah, worth, you know. And I guess I just think in that sense, I hope we can be of service. Like I guess I think the need is going to likely be higher, that more people, even if they didn't want or choose it, are going to be thrust out of their sameness, weather disruptions, like the really hard stuff, more migrations. How will we be of service for those sort of, yeah, individual and maybe even collective resiliencies? That's sort of my sense.
Completely. And don't forget, aliens will probably land next year, because I think that's the only thing that hasn't happened yet, right? But yeah, there is something about, and I'm sort of slightly jesting, because I'm like, at this point, nothing surprises me. But there is, I think, also that there is a choice to adapt, right? So I think you're absolutely right to call that out. Like when we're thrust into change, that it's not something we have chosen or volunteered for, even something we particularly want. Like the research around that is that when we can quite relatively quickly accept that the change is happening, whether we like it or not, your chances of adapting to that in a way that serves you is greater. Mm-hmm. And my thinking on this is, if you already have those resources within you, you're more likely to be able to go, okay, this is happening, and the world's on fire, I'm going to back myself because everything else is uncertain. how can I tap into what matters to me, what is valuable to me in terms of the way I show up to this particular craziness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really cool. So I just want to bring us back to Prochaska and De Clemente's model of change. And I wanted to kind of make this relatively real for you and for your work. So here's how I kind of see this operating. The folks that are in, and this is just the model of change that's in Model 10, Module 10. And it's quite a well-known way of looking at change. But I think it helps us as, self-employed business owners in the business of change to kind of understand where our clients are at. So I see these pre-contemplation guys. These are the folks that are in Charlotte's Facebook community. They're following Nicola on social media. They're in, they're listening to people's podcasts. They're in that place of, I'm interested in this topic, this work, this idea. She seems nice, I'll give her a follow, that kind of thing, right? But often they haven't quite made the connection between their reality and our work, right? So it's like, I've either got no intention of making a change, or it doesn't feel wholly relevant to me yet, or I'm aware that I need to make this change and you could probably help me, but I'm not ready for that quite yet. So you sometimes get this push me pull you of people saying, can you tell me more about your program, or can you tell me more about working with you, but then they don't sign up, right? It's because they're in this pre-contemplation little spiral, right? So our job for these guys is to keep showing up and keep educating and showing them how we can help them, sharing our understanding of their current situation. You want to think of it as a constant invitation to a party at yours, right? It's just that never goes away, right? And so part of the reason I think, I think a lot of us get caught up in social media and we don't think about, why am I here? What's all this for, right? The oceans are dying. Why am I on bloody Instagram the whole time? So, maybe that doesn't come up. But the idea being, I think, is that we're offering this invitation. We're letting people know we exist, that we know about their situation, that we're a human being, and how we can help. And we're offering that invitation. So, it's like, you're showing up to say, hey, this is me. If you need me, I'm here. At some point, your people will go through something in their lives, or something will shift for them, or they'll just go, it's time. And they will decide, oh, I want to address this. And because you're in their circle, they'll go, oh, that woman, I'm following someone who might be able to help me. I like how she shows up. I'm in the Facebook group of that woman. She knows what's up. I reckon she could help me. I think she's got a single session. I'm going to book that, right? See how that works for me. So this is the thing. I think our clients, when they're in that place of, am I ready to make this change? It's almost like they don't quite believe it themselves yet. So we need to help them see the benefit of that, right? So it's like, oops. And what I mean by seeing the benefit of it, how do I get that to go back? Sorry. Nope. Is that, we are sharing with them, this is how I can help you. And when they do book a session with us, we're showing them how this work supports them in wherever they're at, right? So it doesn't matter if they're coming for a single session or a free workshop, or they enroll for a longer term coaching engagement, like we can help them, we can support them, right? So that preparation to action stage is really when folks are working with us, interested in working with us, starting the coaching relationship with us, right? And at some point, they move into action. maintenance, relapse. This is usually the folks that we've worked with for quite a while, where they, we go through that cycle, right? Some of us can, some of us can spend quite a lot of time in that preparation action spiral, right? Where we're just, you know, we're working with a coach or they're working with us, and that becomes its own little spiral. Like this whole linear process is completely bloody arbitrary because no human actually does this in that order. So we can go from I'm aware of a problem exists, but I've got no commitment to action, to preparing to take action, to taking action, and then go back again, right? So that, and that I think is really what the coaching relationship is about, because we'll make an action, take an action, and then maybe experience a setback. So we'll go back to, is there even a problem here, right? And so our work for folks is to keep our eye on the prize, right? Believe in their ability to make the changes that they want to make unconditionally. Show them that setbacks are normal, so that that means they stay in this place of action, maintenance, relapse. That's a healthier place to be when you're wanting to make changes, right? Because you're recovering much faster and you're not kind of getting out of that loop, right? So all to say, like, our clients may even go off and take the action on their own. They may feel like, oh, I'm super resourced, worked with this coach, it was ace, and now I'm going to go off and do stuff on my own. And then at some point you'll offer another different program, or you'll offer a different coaching offer, or they'll be at a different place in their life and they're like, oh, I'm ready to come back into that circle. Right. So, I keep having this experience. Like, I remember someone saying to me, you know, once you kind of work with somebody, that often that person will be in your life for a lot longer. And even I found this just in opening the doors to self-belief school. And I've had people that have been, you know, in my orbit for years and years and years have said, oh, I've been waiting for this. Amazing, you know. So even though I've worked with them in the past, they're like, yeah, I could totally do with a refresher. So all to say, I think it can be a really helpful belief to, some really helpful beliefs to practice are things like, my people are waiting for my work, right? They're waiting for me to invite them to work with them. My people are always on the brink of saying yes to themselves. When my people invest in my work, what they're really investing in is their own change, right? My job is to keep inviting people to work with me. My job is to do my own work around my self-doubt and any other barrier that prevents me from showing up for my people. Yeah. When I sign on a new client, I'm signing on for a long-term relationship. That may or may not have periods where they're an active client. And these kinds of beliefs have served me so bloody well, right? Like this idea that I'm right in the middle of a launch right now, and my kind of underlying belief that I'm practicing all the time is there are so many clients so many potential clients who are waiting to say yes to this. You know, and my job is to keep inviting them. We always think it's us, right? Oh, I'm doing too much selling, right? Or I'm sending too much out, or I'm being too pushy. And you can trust yourself. Someone has consented to receive information from you and you're sharing it with them. They have the absolute power to unfollow at any point. It's like believe things that really support you. It's only a matter of time. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The right people are the ones that show up. So little we can control, right? Only what we believe, what we feel, what we say, what we do. So choose good things to believe. Choose things that are in service of you, your business, your clients, Yeah. So good. Love that you love that. Yeah. Never doubt that there are people in your world right now who want to work with you. Such a fun thought to think, because then you're like, where are they? I will go show up and see if I can find them, right? Yeah, really fun. Really fun. Cool. Okay, loves. So there we are. There we are at the end of our curriculum. And we're just getting started. Like, really do believe that. I think there's so much fun to be had in implementing this work and then, you know, joining a community of coaches. We've got, yes, people coming out of the woodwork. So good, isn't it? So at the our support calls, graduate support calls, are the last Thursday of every month at 10 and 5. So we've got one coming up, I think, either the week or 2 weeks after we complete. So you don't get rid of me that easy, right? Yeah. Oh, I love that, Charlotte. That's so cool. Yeah. People are hanging on my every word. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They're at 10 and 5 p.m., Lorraine, so same as our class times, just to make it easy for you. And yeah, it's the last Thursday of the month. Yeah, the last Thursday of every month. So yeah, there's one coming up, is what I'm saying. So even when we have our closing circle, you'll still be able to come back to it. At this stage, Jo, I'm not planning to open Coach Match, reopen it. The administration of it nearly did me in. nearly did me in. But I am thinking about a coaching directory. So that might be something that comes up. But I probably won't be for the next couple of months. So yeah. But yeah. So yeah. But I think a directory might be quite fun just to for anyone who is looking for a coach, for sure. Yeah, Nicola.
I'm just so excited to mark that time in my book. Sorry, did you say so 10 and 5, like the same times as
same our times. Class?
And yeah. Sorry, is it 60 minutes or is it often like this where it often is more like 90?
It's more like 60.
Okay.
Yeah. So we usually, so you'll get an invitation. If you definitely want coaching, mentoring or supervision, you can just email me back and say, I definitely want a spot. And then I'll come to people in the order that they've asked for help. Okay. So we usually have a chance for 3 people to get support in each call.
Oh, fun. Okay.
And it's fun to witness as well, just to see what's going on. So, yeah.
Perfect. Thanks. I'm excited for that.
Cool. All righty. Well, thank you so much. Oh, do those get recorded? Yes, they are recorded. Yes, the graduate support calls are recorded. So are the coach advanced practice calls. All of them are, I think, actually. Yeah. So they're all, Lucy handles all of that. So yeah. Yeah. All good. All right. Thanks, everyone. I am off on holiday tomorrow for a week. So I will see you all in the following week when we have our final call. And Scott will look after you next week with the certification details. So yeah, all good. All right, lovely people, take care of yourselves and I'll see you at the closing circle. Yeah. Okay. Thanks for today. It's been really fun. All right. See you. Bye, everybody.